This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Yes, another beautiful afternoon here in Melbourne on a Saturday. It's 5 minutes past one. Pete Dillon with you through until 2 o'clock. Today we're talking the Melbourne Cup Carnival and spring racing, what you should eat, what you should drink, and how you should protect your liver. Stay tuned, we're going to have some fun.
Joy.
Awesome atmosphere to take you into Derby Day here in Melbourne. It is 6 minutes past one. Hello, Pete Dillon with you here on Cravings, taking you through until 2 o'clock. It is Derby Day. It is a day that you might be thinking about going to the races. Maybe it's maybe Tuesday's your day, Melbourne Cup Day. Thursday for Oaks Day, or next Saturday for the big family day at Flemington. Whatever it is a week of indulgence. And so I thought it sensible that we should talk about things that the Melbourne Cup involves, or Cup Week involves. If you're going to take some time off work, you need to have a hamper prepared to sustain you through, you know, trotting around in your heels, wearing a fascinator, throwing up in your clutch. You do need a fascinator. A hamper of food so that you can line your stomach. We're going to speak with Paul Jewson. He's from Fitzrovia in Fitzroy Street in St Kilda. You know him very well. He's a good guy. He's going to talk about food hampers and what have you that they're preparing. Also joining us is Jack Mullard. Jack is from The Tasting Table, and this is a new experience. He's going to talk us through all things sparkling, from something that you can buy with loose change in your purse, right through into the expensive stuff that you can buy with your winnings from this afternoon's derby. Look, it's going to be good fun. Paul, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Good afternoon. We're after 1 o'clock. It might be all right for you hospitality people that don't get up until 11 o'clock in the morning. It is afternoon. Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
It's always a pleasure to have you in. And Jack, welcome.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, good. I'm not sure where we should start. I think we should also mention that Emma Sterling, she's our resident nutritionist and dietitian, is going to join us. And we're going to talk with her about protecting yourself as well. So making sure that you do the right thing. Is it making sure you have water, or should you be eating blueberries, or putting strawberries in your champagne? Does that constitute having a food group? Who knows? Jack, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about The Tasting Table.
So I guess we're a new little sort of shop on High Street, Armidale, and we're focusing on sort of independent, small boutique producers. Yep. And we use a thing called Enomatic tasting machines, where people can just come and try.
That's
before
those
they...
things in bottles, yeah, that have little tubes, and you just...
Yeah, and you can just put yourself underneath in sort of a sampling dispensing system, I guess. Very nice. Widely used in around the world and in London. Harrods have just done about a £2 million shop fit and put in all these sort of sparkling machines.
It's also why they're used in restaurants, I think, absolute certainty on pours and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Press Club use them just down the road from here, actually, and George's Restaurant and places like that. So they're really widely used. We're just using them in a retail environment instead of in a restaurant or in a bottle shop kind of thing. So, yeah, we're a bit different, and we focus on those smaller little producers, including grower champagne and bits and pieces like that.
Right.
So it's just a bit new and a bit different, and we're just trying to get ourselves sort of understand what we're all about and come down and have a taste and, see what you think.
And people can obviously come in and join you and sit down and sort of have a discussion with you about,
yeah, of course,
about what they like to drink, how they like to drink it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And we do tasting experiences and tasting clubs and sort of classes and bits and pieces like that, as well as sort of we do by the glass and we do cheese and meat boards and sort of BYO takeaway, because we don't have a full kitchen. So you can come along, and if you've great Japanese next door to us, and you can just take some sashimi and sit down and have some Pinot or some...
Well, if you're going to have sashimi, I would suggest a chilled, very dry, savoury rosé.
Yeah, no, that goes great with it. Really, really good style.
Only because we're coming into Rosé Revolution.
Yeah, we are in the weather,
I'm very excited about it. Paul, for those that don't know Fitzrovia, that haven't been listening to this show for the last, now in its fourth year.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Fitzrovia.
Well, Fitzrovia is an all-day dining, breakfast, lunch and dinner restaurant in Fitzroy Street in St Kilda, looking out over Albert Park. And taking in the beautiful sunshine this time of year that we've got.
Yes.
We've been open for a year now. We just had our first birthday last month, which is a fantastic time.
Good. Already a year.
I know.
Oh,
time
gosh.
Flies. Absolutely
it
flies.
It does when you're having fun.
And this is the busiest time of year for us, because we specialise in doing picnic hampers for spring season. We're just up the road from the Royal Melbourne Yacht Squadron. We're across the road from Albert Park. We're in a really good position to be doing.
So for those people that are sailing to to the race course, they can pop by for a hamper on their way.
That's right.
It sounds terribly fabulous. We'll come back and talk about the hampers in just a little bit. We're also going to speak to Emma Sterling. She's our resident nutritionist and dietitian here on Cravings. If you did hear that great big crashing noise in the background, Paul Jewson, you are a professional. You did not bat an eyelid. You kept going as I almost went backside up on my chair. It is now 11 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. We're going to have a song in just a second, and I thought I could team here with sort of get a bit of a theme running through today's show. So I did. This song is Only the Horses by the Scissor Sisters. And apart from anything else, it's a cracking album. And this is a terrific track. And it'll take us through to have some messages. And we'll come back with Emma Sterling, Paul Jewson and Jack Mullett here on Cravings, where it's 12 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9. Check out Weekends on Joy.
You should check out Weekends here on Joy 94.9. Pete Dillam here with you at Cravings, taking you through until 2 o'clock. The boys will be in with Fender Benders after that to talk about motor vehicles. And for somebody who doesn't drive cars, I actually find that quite an interesting show, because I learn stuff. I've got some guests in the studio. Paul Jewson is here from Fitzrovia. Welcome back to you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We are talking with him food for Spring Racing Week, particularly Melbourne Cup Week. Also joining us is Jack Mullard from the Tasting Table in Armidale. Jack.
Hi there.
And on the phone is one of our favourite women in all of the world. She is fabulously gorgeous and fabulously knowledgeable. She's going to join us to talk about the good things, the things that are going to keep us nice through this next week. Emma Sterling, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete, and hi, Paul and Jack.
Good morning, Emma.
Hi there.
God, we're going to speak to Paul Jewson in the next break, because he still thinks it's morning.
I'm still in a time zone, my God.
He's one of these chefs, Emma, that gets out of bed at, 11 o'clock in the morning. So he thinks it's morning.
That's okay.
Happens to the best of us. So we are talking about, it's spring racing. Well, it's the big week of spring racing. It starts today with Derby Day. Tuesday is Melbourne Cup Day. Thursday is Oaks Day. And next Saturday is, I think, Stakes Day for the family, where you can all get along in your finery to Flemington and try and keep yourself nice. But it's not very easy when you may be wandering around a tent or a marquee or the car park, sipping sparkling. We're going to talk, Jack, first of all, let's talk some mid-range. So something that's you open your purse, you've got $25 that you've won or that you've, conned from your partner.
Yeah.
What's a reasonable sparkling we can buy for $25?
I mean, there's quite a lot out there, but I mean, something that sort of is the classic, everyone knows, the sort of Moët Chandon from up in the Yarra Valley. Very...
Domaine Chandon.
Moët Chandon is from
France. Mm.
The Domaine Chandon from up... Thank you for that.
That's all right.
So it's that sort of style, or you can go to something a bit more left field, something like... Black Billy from South Australia. That'll be about $20.
What's Black Billy?
Black Billy is a Chardonnay Pinot Noir, so the classic grapes that come from Champagne, but they're just making it in South Australia. And also there's things like O'Leary Walker, Hertel, and they're sort of a bit more known for their Riesling and some of their Shirazes, but they're sort of around about $26. Black Billy's around about $17,
okay,
$18
so retail. Reasonable prices.
Yeah.
Emma, if we put a strawberry into our sparkling wine, does that constitute eating a food group?
Well, you actually are getting towards your serves of fruit a day. You are probably, you know, particularly if you've got a few strawberries in the bottom, you're probably moderating the amount of alcohol in the glass, so you're stretching your, you know, alcoholic drink a bit further. And yeah, certainly there's some antioxidants in the strawberries which will help your system potentially metabolise the alcohol that you're about to down.
Okay. Paul's going to talk us through a typical hamper that they prepare at Fitzrovia. So it's all beautiful, fresh food that you've sourced locally. What's going to be in a hamper that we're going to take to the races, Paul? And Emma's going to tell us what we're missing at the end of this hamper.
Okay. So to visualise it, Emma, we've got a beautiful wicker basket, which comes complete with a Burberry rug for you to sit down on, yada, yada, yada. And then we've broken it down into entrees, mains and desserts. We've got, say, three different entrees going on in there, a little vegetarian tart, maybe a pork and fennel sausage roll, and a little salad. And then you move on to the main course, which will be a range of little different baguettes and patisseries and ciabatte, all with some vegetarian fillings or seafood or meat fillings. And then onto dessert, which will be like quite a widespread of four or five different type of pastries and tarts. Again, with strawberries and cream, of course, because it's springtime. And then freshly squeezed orange juice, mineral water. So it's a lot of different things. We just really like variety.
That sounds fantastic, Paul. You had me at Wicker Basket.
And you had me at Burberry Rug.
Yeah, I still have my Fortnum & Mason's basket that I was gifted many years ago in London, and we still carry that out to picnics. So that sounds fantastic.
Perfect.
Tell me more about the salad.
Obviously, right.
The dietitian's ears pick up about salad.
Yes, fair enough. The salad that we're doing at the moment is a quinoa salad, which has got some roasted purple carrots. They're these beautiful heirloom carrots.
They're fantastic, aren't they?
They're really, and they're so sweet. Everyone thinks that they're beetroot. It's like, no, really, they're not, they're carrot. But a range of different roasted vegetables. I really like whole grains and ancient grains. So we're using farro, fricka, and we've found this fantastic technique that if you cook and then refry your quinoa, it becomes like little miniature popcorn.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, I've got some of that in
what
my cupboard.
What do you fry it in?
In olive oil, like a really light olive oil.
Fantastic. That's an interesting find.
It's really good. And we sprinkle it over a lot of breakfast dishes. Mm. And it just gives a real crunch and a real pop to a textural contrast to things.
I've got something that's been done with fried quinoa that has a salted caramel flavour on it as well.
Yum.
And putting that on some porridge is magnificent.
Mm, I believe it.
Sounds good. Well, we certainly know that there's that huge push these days towards nutritious whole grains. And you know, certainly from a dietitian's point of view, we're happy that it's put grains back on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I've just been looking up what is going to be happening in the birdcage this year, because it's always interesting to see what's happening there. And so Swiss have got George Colombaris on board, and so they're doing things like his Frika salad from Hellenic Republic and things like that as well. So I think that we'll see a lot of whole grains popping up at spring racing, which is fantastic.
And things that are not wheat as well, so that we're getting away from this full-on gluten diet that we have.
That's right. We certainly are seeing, you know, as we've talked previously, Pete, you know, this increase in a genuine number of people that are diagnosed with problems with gluten, but particularly celiac disease, but also good or bad, we're seeing a lot of people, just because there's that trend, trialing, you know, a wheat-free diet for personal reasons, whether that be weight loss or just looking at something to give their health a bit of an edge. You know, we certainly want to caution people to always get good advice if you're going to cut out a whole food group from your diet and see a professional. But yeah, it's a big trend going wheat-free.
Emma, I just want to take a couple of steps back. Before we get to Tuesday on Melbourne Cup Day, it's now Saturday. If I wanted to try and fit into a shirt or a pair of trousers that I know have been a bit of a struggle of late, and I've got a couple of days to do it, what's a really healthy way that I can sort of give my system a bit of a cleanse, a bit of a detox, before I hit the races and hit the sparkling?
Yeah, look, we certainly know that you can, you know, jump on the scales and drop a few kilos by making...
No, I'm serious. I've got to fit into a pair of pants on Tuesday.
Well, this is the thing. What we know is that type of approach to weight loss, you're really just going to be dehydrating your body or losing, I suppose, fluid that's retained in your body. So the tricks are to go very low salt intake, so drop your salt intake back again, because obviously a high salt intake will retain fluid in your body. It's going for things like mainly plant-based diets of lots of fruits and vegetables, and just a very controlled portion of protein, and eating very light for those days. But it's about cutting back mainly on the salt, so you force your body to lose some of that retained fluid. Of course, when you go back to normal eating again, it's not really body fat loss that you're losing, but it can help you feel a little bit slimmer leading into the big day. I think the main thing is that thinking about the approaches to spring racing is that, there's a lovely week of celebrations, but for many then it just rolls into the Christmas celebrations as well. So
yeah, I know.
A couple of days at the Cup or a Derby is not going to undo, all that wonderful healthy eating you've been doing all year, Pete. It's what happens afterwards.
See, my job is really difficult. I as people know, I sort of eat and drink for a living, so I really struggle with balance, and I can have 3-6 course degustations with matching wines in a week, so there's no way I'm ever going to lose this this barrel shape that I have, I don't think, but knowing that I've got, if I can have plant-based diet and all of that for a couple of days, it's probably wise to limit the amount of alcohol between now and Tuesday, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, we certainly know that alcohol adds kilojoules to your body. I mean, a small glass of wine alone's got about 500 kilojoules. So you're looking at the kilojoule counts. You're looking at the appetite stimulation effect. So we know that some studies show us that, after a couple of glasses, we have an increased appetite. And often that's for higher fat or more comfort or indulgence.
Salty fried food.
Salty peanuts at the bar or the kebab on the way home, So the alcohol has those effects on us. But yeah, look, if you know you've got a busy period of entertaining coming up, most people, the wisest approach is just to try and stick to, healthy eating for the days in the lead up. And, my approach has always been, enjoy yourself when you're there. And I mean, everything that Paul was, describing his hamper sounds fantastic. And we know lots of little tastings do tend to stimulate you to eat more because you want to try a little bit of everything in the hamper. But there's nothing wrong with that on a special, occasion. It's just how often does that slip in? And that's where, with your type of lifestyle, but you know yourself, you have to moderate. If you can, you eat a healthier breakfast on the days that you can, and you eat a healthier lunch on the days you can, and all those other things.
Where possible.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Emma Sterling. She is our almost resident nutritionist and dietitian here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Emma, stick with us. We'll be back after these messages to continue this discussion about the best for us in spring racing week. Also in the studio, Jack Mallard from the Tasting Table. We're going to talk us through some more sparklings that we can find. And maybe there's some low alcohol stuff that is around in the wine market that might be better for us. I don't know. Jack's going to be back with us. And of course, Paul Jewson talking all sorts of yummy goodies that we can eat over the spring racing season. It is 27 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are listening to Joy 94.9. It is Saturday afternoon. I'm Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. And we are talking today, getting ourselves ready for the spring carnival, for the big week that is Cup Week. Today's Derby Day, Tuesday's Cup Day, Thursday's Oaks Day, and then Saturday, of course, is Stakes Day out at Flemington. So we're talking about food that you can eat, drinks that you can drink, and, habits that you can form to try and keep yourself nice and limit those possible nasty days that do happen the next day. Emma, do low alcohol, low carb beers and low carb wines make a difference?
Well, we probably need to ask Jack first about his opinion on those.
Well, I sort of have prefaced that with Jack, that we would ask you, do they make a difference? And then he can tell us what's around. Yeah.
Yeah, look, we certainly do know that there are very individual differences to way people metabolise alcohol, but obviously there's those government guidelines around what constitutes a standard drink, and that's what contains 10 grams of alcohol per serve. So we know from looking at products that are labelled as being reduced in alcohol content that they certainly can make a difference. Obviously if you're getting something, the low alcohol wines tend to be about 30% reduced in alcohol and in kilojoules or calories. So you really technically can have a third more and for the same kilojoules and alcohol content. So that can stretch your drinking further. And we, years ago, people used to think, oh, they were just sort of watered down wines. When I've looked into it more recently, but I'm sure Jack can enlighten us further, is
yeah,
that
he will.
There are new wine making techniques that allow them to separate off, I suppose, the aromatics and the flavour a portion of the wine. It's not just watered down wine. It's a different type of processing to get the lower alcohol wines.
I wonder if I have a problem with these. Jack, what does exist in the market?
There is more and more coming out. There aren't many and none of them are really sort of big branded. I guess beer is definitely something that low carb has definitely come along and sort of picked up. And then there's definitely, as we were saying earlier, gluten-free beers that are coming onto the market as well.
Gluten-free beers?
Yeah, there's not much of them being made in Australia. There's a few being made in New Zealand, very, very small producers, and a few being made in the United Kingdom and America and those kind of places, but they're still available sort of export, and one of the guys who do them is a company called St. Peter's from the UK, and they do a gluten-free beer because there's quite a big market over there for that. I mean,
Lindemann's bought... Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Jack, what's your opinion on the taste of it? I know it's not about taste. That's the first thing people that have been diagnosed with celiac diseases, and you say, well, gluten's found in here and here and here, and we're sorry, beer. I mean, that's the hardest thing for the blokes to cope with.
Yeah.
Finding, you know, we're yet to find anyone rave about any of the gluten-free beers out there. They prefer to switch their drink to something different.
I mean, this particular one, the St. Peter's one, is actually, it's very palatable. It's not something I drink sort of, if I had a choice to drink a gluten and a non-gluten, but as a preference of having to drink that, it is very palatable. It is quite acceptable.
Oh, fantastic. We'll give it a try.
Lindemann's bought out some wine a couple of years ago that was targeted at those that were going to be weight conscious, and I believe it's called Early Harvest or something along those lines, that is a reduced alcohol content, but also a reduced carb content.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with, it's called Early Harvest, so the biggest thing with early and sort of late harvest, sugar goes in a grape, and as it gets later in this growing season of the grape, the sugars can sort of get bigger and bigger, and the alcohol, of course, get bigger as well. So if they're harvesting earlier, there's going to be less sugars, so it's going to, of course, be less amount of alcohol and less amount of kilojoules. I mean, they've been making things called Frizzanti in Veneto in Italy for years and years. And it's
Which
sort
is
of,
similar to what we would call like a Moscato.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
pick up for 6% alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of like there's 6-7% alcohols. Mm. And they're sort of, some of them can be properly sparkling like a champagne. Some of them can actually be that dry style and be quite light and sort of semi-sparkling. So they're finished with a crown cap rather than with a cork and things like that. And they're very good and sort of a very good alternative if you just want something nice and easy drinking.
Some of those being made right here in Victoria Giant Steps, Innocent Bystander in the Yarra Valley. And Brown Brothers have just bought out... some Moscato minis and some, I think they're like a Dolcetto, so a red wine mini as well that might help people moderate their intake as well. Paul, you're fond of a drink.
Don't mind if I do.
is there something that you have changed to or take particular care of when you drink because of the potential impact on your body?
Very much so. I don't drink beer in the evening anymore. Mm. Where I used to go out in classic situation after work and go out and have a few pints, particularly in the UK where it's de rigueur, but over here. I switched to red wine because I think red wine's like it's... Firstly, you don't drink nearly as much. I don't have as much.
It depends who you are.
I don't have that much of a tolerance for red wine. Mm. I think it goes much better with food. It matches food more beautifully. And it's a more Epicurean thing to drink rather than something to drink for the sake of it.
Drinking. Emma, red wine has known to have characteristics that can reduce heart disease. A piece of a very dark chocolate and some red wine is supposed to be very, very good for us in a number of ways. Has Paul made a good choice?
Yes, look, absolutely. We certainly are learning more and more about, you know, these things we call antioxidants or antioxidant activity in foods. And red wine has long been touted for its antioxidants. They're the group called flavonoids. Sometimes you'll hear the words phenols or catechins describing those antioxidants. So definitely there are more of those flavonoids in red wine. But very, very interestingly, most of the research on the positive benefits to health with alcohol drinking, obviously there's very much a dose response. It's only on very low levels of alcohol intake, and the protective effect of heart disease actually comes from all types of alcohol. So it's not exclusive to red wine. There's something in the alcohol that is protective. But as I said, most of the studies are on people that have one or at the most two glasses.
I was going to say, you don't know how happy you've made me, but you've just clarified it right there. Emma, very quickly, just another question before we let you go. What are some of the things that we can do before we go to the races the night before on the morning of to make sure that, that we're doing the right thing by our body? Do we have a Barocca before we go out? You know, does all that vitamin B stuff work? Is it plenty of sleep and plenty of water the night before and water during the day? What are some of the tips to help us keep ourselves nice and also to prevent that, that next day where we're starting to feel a bit dusty?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, certainly we know that the major effects of alcohol, that hangover feeling, come from dehydration. So you really have to rehydrate. So that's about...
With something other than alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely, because alcohol is a dehydration, has a dehydrating effect on the body. So you need to be well hydrated leading into the big day. You need to space your alcoholic drinks with water or other beverages, fruit juice, that don't dehydrate the body. You want to replace some of the electrolytes that are being lost through drinking. So that's things like adding some, vitamins and minerals back into your body. There is some studies on B vitamins. So looking at, popping the Barocca or the whole idea of B vitamins, there are some studies to show that it can help. But most people, if you're eating during the day, you'll be getting B vitamins in through nutritious whole grains and seeds and legumes and nuts and things that you're eating. So maybe you don't need to supplement. Another tip would be just if you're a coffee drinker and you're heading to the races for the day and you've forgotten to have your morning coffee or a couple of coffees that you've had during the day, you're going to get a whap, big headache just from skipping your caffeine intake. So remember to also add that coffee into your day. And then to treat symptoms. I know that the Swiss tent, you can pop into their day spa at the cup and get ginger tea that might help keep your system in check, and pop some B vitamins there. So there's a lot of things you can do, but it's really about staying hydrated during the day and to follow up afterwards.
Well, Emma, it's always good to have your very salient advice, and we shall talk to you again, no doubt, in a few weeks' time when we're heading into Christmas and we need to be mindful of, again, probably an overindulgence at that time of the year with cocktail parties and that sort of thing. Always good to talk to you, my dear.
Thank you so much, and enjoy, everyone. Have a champagne for me.
Will do. That's Emma Sterling. She is a dietitian and nutritionist from Scoop Nutrition. She's a very wise woman, boys.
Yeah, definitely.
And, it doesn't say don't do it, but just says these are ways that you can, mitigate some of the things that will happen. I want to talk more about some of the other things that are happening at Fitzrovia, changing hours and all sorts of things. No, he says no. And some... And just other things that people can do, like breakfast on their way to the races.
Yeah, we're doing a fantastic offer all of this month on each of the race days. Mm. We're doing a beautiful breakfast of champions,
yep.
Which, as you know, this time of year is fantastic for asparagus. And I love Kooi Rup asparagus. We've got a fantastic contact down there that we're getting beautiful,
good
thick,
bit of
chunky
Gippsland.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. We forge a lot of direct connections with a lot of regional Victorian suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that we do at Fitzrovia, all the fresh produce is sourced from Victoria.
Yep.
And we make a real point of that. But we're doing some fantastic Gippsland asparagus with some home-smoked ocean trout, some poached eggs, crispy quinoa, fennel, and a glass of Prosecco.
I was just going to say, Jack, what are we going to drink with that? But Prosecco sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, Prosecco would be perfect as a nice light way to start. There's some great Proseccos coming out of Macedon Ranges and Dandenong and those kind of places.
And again, up in the northeast.
Yeah, up nice in the Kings Valley and places like that are making these lovely sort of Victorian style of the sort of Italian.
We're working with the guys from Crismont from La Zona. Fantastic work. Really, really good local drop. Really good, great price point, and I recommend them. So we're doing that for each day of the race, for each of the race days.
Yep.
For $30, including your sparkling.
Cheap. And probably some tea in there, I imagine, would be a good start.
Indeed.
As well.
And I think it's really fascinating what Emma was saying before about keeping your caffeine up, because I know if I've got a busy schedule in the morning and I get up and don't think about my coffee, I will have a bit of a headache by midday.
So I get up and don't think unless I have coffee.
Exactly.
It's the first thing that I do in the morning. If I don't make coffee, I'll at least make some tea. So yeah. I get a little bit of a caffeine hit because there's as much caffeine in tea as there is in coffee.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't feel like it, though.
No,
does
it's
it?
Just the way that the body absorbs it. Because coffee, and here's me knowing too much about stuff, when coffee is ground, there is an oil that is produced, and that causes the crema on top of your short black or long black. So that's oily. So it digests into your system very, very differently than tea. But they do have the same amount of caffeine, including green tea. Green tea is really, really high in caffeine.
Yeah, no, it's very good for you as well. I mean, it's kind of used a lot in the wine trade as a detox from those nights out you have.
So maybe that's what we can add to the list of your behaviours following, well, today being Derby Day and Tuesday on Wednesday morning. A cup of green tea might be the thing to kick you off. And, of course, as Emma said, make sure that you have lots and lots of fluid. Boys, we're going to have another track and then we're going to come back and we'll talk about some other sparklings in different price points that people might want to be able to pick up. How they can come and do some more tastings at your venue and Paul, other things that are happening at Fitzrovia. It is 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. This is Cravings. Don't forget to stick with the boys from Fender Bender as well because they're really good fun. This Paul Jewson and Jack Mullard are my guests. And this is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon.
Joy 94.9. Download Joy's free iPhone app, joy.org.au.
Yeah, do download that app, and then you can listen to this program anywhere you like around the world. You can just go to joy.org.au, click on the banner on the website, and you can download the Joy app. You can also download podcasts of almost every program here on Joy. So 7 days a week, 24 hours a day of programming, you can find a podcast of your favorite program. So if, perchance, you don't get a chance to listen to, say, Cravings every Saturday or Salt and Pepper every Tuesday at 7 o'clock, you can download those podcasts and listen, see what you've missed out on. We're talking spring racing. We're talking the very big week that is Melbourne Cup week. And out at Flemington and joining me in the studio, I have Paul Jewson from Fitzrovia in Fitzroy Street doing a lot of food, breakfast of champions and hampers and things for the races with a Burberry rug. And do we have to bring the rugs back?
You do. Oh, yes, bummer. You do.
Damn. And also in the studio is Jack from the Tasting Table. Jack, I want to sort of, we talked very briefly before about some cheap wine and well, not cheap, reasonably priced sparkling and low alcohol wines, but let's move up to the mid-range. So we've got $50. What are we going to buy?
I mean, there's so much well-priced actual proper champagne out there that you can go and find now. There's a lot of great stuff coming from Tasmania, from New Zealand, and really if you go and sort of search for $50, you should be getting some really good quality. You can get entry-level sort of champagne, your Veuve Clicquot's be on offer, your Moët Chandon. Not a massive fan of the Moët, so
neither am I. I find it just too yeasty or too something.
I think it's sort of gone downhill in the last 10 years or so, definitely.
I don't like Dom Perignon, I think, which is the same house.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, Verve's great. I mean, if you can find your sort of Paul Roger's, which was the wine they had at the Royal Wedding, actually, and bits and pieces like that, they're great wines and real sort of, top class in the weather, and it's nice and sunny outside, and just go with lots of different feeds, very versatile, and you should be able to find them sort of 50, 60.
And I guess they're the things that you can, you know, if your budget for alcohol is $50 or $60, enjoy something quite good rather than having a lot of stuff that's not so good.
Yeah, I mean, and you can have, I mean, and there's a lot of grower champagnes out there now. That's kind of what we focus on at the Tasting Table. And there's a lot of things like Le Menil is a Grand Cru grower champagne. So it's a really good product. It's lots of amazing fruit that goes into making top wines like Cristal and Krug. And they're tiny little producers who all combine together and make these really wonderful sort of champagnes and sparkling styles. And then there's the sort of top end Proseccos, because you can get Prosecco at sort of $40-$50, and it's got that much more elegant style to it. It's not
and
that
they're
sweet.
Italian Proseccos?
Italian Proseccos from Veneto or the sort of Venice region. And they use a grape called Grella, or was Prosecco until a couple of years ago. And there's more of them being grown in Australia nowadays. I mean, Brown Brothers used to do one a long time ago. I think they sort of still do as well.
They still do a Prosecco, which is quite palatable.
Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of other styles coming out as well, and a lot of other sort of sparklings to go with it.
The other one is from also up in the northeast, from Del Sotto.
Yes, and there's a few from the King's Valley. I think Pizzini do one or two as well. And there's a few producers like that who have brought over with obviously Italian heritage and stuff, and brought over those styles of sparkling. And yeah, I mean, champagne personally for me, I think you can't really go wrong if you can find yourself a decent entry level sort of champagne. But then there's also, I mean, stuff that I particularly am very passionate about is English sparkling wine, which doesn't
What do you talk about English sparkling wine?
Yeah, doesn't make it over to Australia very much. There's a bit of stuff coming in now.
So give us a bit of a hint on first of all, where is it produced?
So it's produced in Kent, Sussex and Cornwall.
So in the southeast.
Southeast and then a bit to the southwest towards Cornwall and Devon. And they beat champagne regularly at blind tastings.
Paul, you and I are equally as surprised about
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. Our ears pricked up at the same time.
I guess it's because we don't necessarily see the marriage between the UK and champagne, apart from, you know, you can bring it across in the car.
So it's the biggest. So the UK is one of the biggest champagne markets in the world. And actually, the traditional style you drink today is because of the British palate. Perrier's Jouet in about 1890 odd changed the style from a sort of sweeter style of to a British,
which it always was.
Style. Yeah.
If people want to read about the history of champagne in particular, there's a wonderful book called The Madame Clicquot.
Yes.
The Widow Clicquot. And Veuve Clicquot is known as the Widow.
Yes, of course.
In drinking circles. Let's have a bottle of the Widow. A remarkable story about this woman's life, but also about the genesis of champagne, how champagne first happened. And there are a lot of urban myths about monks. And,
of course.
You know, I've just tasted the stars and... I think his name was Dom Pérignon, wasn't it?
And I mean, the actual, there's a big sort of kerfuffle, I guess, between the English and the French, and I don't think it'll ever be fixed, but it was originally...
They're still fighting wars, aren't they?
There's an English guy who supposedly put a paper into the Royal Society in London with the sort of method of champagne making in about 10 years before Dom Pérignon was actually a monk in the Benedictine sort of society. But the French, of course, are never going to agree that ever happened.
Of course not. Because you now can't call anything champagne that is not produced from the region of Champagne in France.
Yeah, and you can't even call it... So it used to be called Méthode Champenoise. Now it's the Méthode Traditionnelle. They're trying to get rid of that even almost. And they're trying to expand the Champagne region because they've got so much sort of supply that they need to sort of do, and there's so much demand for it, and they're trying to get it out there.
What about things like a bit of old Heidsieck & Co. or... Charles Heidsieck. They're at reasonable price points?
The entry level, the non-vintages we'd call it, they definitely are. And I mean, most of the big Grand Marque houses will definitely have their entry level stuff, and it will be reasonably priced. The Lansons, the Tattingers, Bollinger is the
Comte de Tat.
But Bollinger is the drink that sort of they drink at Royal Ascot. That's the one that you'll sort of find.
It's
in
also
the UK
what they drink on Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah.
Paul, do you have a favourite sparkling? Do you have a champagne? A little penchant.
Yeah, I think I'm quite partial to a bit of Bolly.
I love Bolly as well. And there's something about Bollinger and also Tattinger.
Yeah.
My two favourite houses, I think.
They're quite a big masculine sort of full style, I guess. Mm. They've got a lot of bready, yeasty, really kind of just...
Toasted brioche.
Yeah, a big nose to them rather than sort of... And it's from the village they come from rather than the Les Menil village, which is... And it's to do with the different grapes that are used in there and amounts of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and those kind of things and the blends that make them as they are. And
Jack, how old are you?
I'm 25.
I was about to say, you don't look very old, first of all. How do you know so much about...
I was very lucky to work for a really good company in the UK, a traditional company, who are about 240 years old, called Corney & Barrow, and drunk amazing wines and did a qualification called a WSET Level 4, the Wine Spirit Education Trust, which is the level below a Master of Wine in the United Kingdom. And sort of did that from when I was about 20 years on. And what was I good at when I was at uni? Lots of drinking. So I kind of went into the wine trade.
Yeah, but what you drank at university is
nothing like
what you're drinking now.
But no, just very lucky to sort of do it and lots of reading and research and go and taste as much as possible and just get yourself out there and trying as much as you physically can do. And I started about 18 in South Africa, kicked onto a wine tour by a mate of mine who was doing his exams and just went from there, really.
Excellent.
Because I was just sitting here thinking, how does he know so much about all of this? And he's just a slip of a boy.
It's such a massive field, isn't it?
Oh, it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's one of the cases that the more you know, the more you know that you don't know, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know. I know so little in comparison to so many people. Mm. There's so many people out there who know so much and still so know little.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a big field and it's ever growing.
Absolutely.
And every year is different and every vintage is different. And there's new wine making techniques and new wine making areas like England and sort of Hungary and stuff that are coming and making these.
Slovenia.
Yeah, exactly, and these great ones.
Paul, I guess it's very similar to food in that you need to keep abreast of trends. You need to be aware of what's happening outside of Melbourne, outside of Australia, outside of, you know, with the movements, for example, in the Nordic cuisine. So
yes.
Particularly from Denmark, who are changing the way we eat.
I think the Scandinavians in general are making so much of a difference, particularly in like new foraging styles and also like focusing on regional areas and coming up with menus that constantly draw on the seasons from a region. I think that's a real growth area in food, and justifiably so as well.
Mm. And we've got people here in Melbourne who do, or in Victoria, who do a similar thing. You know, there's people like Ben Shuri at Attica who just go out and forage for stuff along the ocean at 5 o'clock in the morning. There's a guy doing that at Taxi who used to work for Ben, so I think that influences has come from there. Dan Hunter at the Royal Mail in Dunkeld, who's also does a lot of there's bugger all in Dunkeld apart from the Royal Mail, so does a lot of foraging and growing as well. And I think this is very much the trend in food.
Yeah, I went to Loma a couple of weeks ago as well.
Isn't it magnificent?
My God, fantastic.
Aaron Turner is an incredible chef and a brilliant imagination.
And so focused on what he does. And he's not someone that, you know, flouts his trumpet quite a lot. He does what he does and does it really, really well consistently.
He does, and he's a good fellow. We're going to have a couple of messages and come back and wrap this baby up. We're almost done, boys. It's Cravings here on Joy 94.9. I've got to get out so I can go and have a bit of a punt on the derby.
Joy 94.9.
You are here on Joy 94.9. It's almost time for me to go and to let these gentlemen get back to what they do, which is running a restaurant and or running a kitchen in a restaurant, and also the tasting table. So, Paul, before we go, any other news from Fitzrovia that we should be looking out for?
Well, we've just got some fantastic outdoor furniture.
You've been to IKEA.
Have. No, we bought this beautiful teak and stainless steel stuff from Perth. It's absolutely beautiful. So we've got a 50-seater terrace now outside, looking out over Albert Park, underneath the beautiful plane trees of Fitzroy Street.
So if people are sort of planning something for Pride or whatever, they can get in early.
Yeah, Pride March goes right past our door.
Excellent.
But yeah, check out details at fitzrovia.com.au, including...
I knew you were going to come in with the website. I didn't even need to ask.
And that's got all details of our hampers and also outside catering, and we've got fingers in many different pies. So,
as you should.
Indeed.
And Jack, where's the tasting table?
Tasting table's at 1219 High Street, so just off Glenferrie and High Street Road, and we have websites and everything else.
Yes, which is?
www.tasting-table.com.au.
Tasting-table.com.au. It's been a joy to have you in the studio, both of you, to talk about all things of this week of indulgence. I was going to ask both of you, do you have a tip for the Melbourne Cup? But it might be a bit early, given that we've got to get through today's races first. So... Americaine is the favourite. I'll just give you a hint, this is what it sounded like last year.
And getting up on the inside, lost in the moment with a challenge. Here's Red Cadeau starting to flash home on the outside now. Lucas Krennic hit the lead. Red Cadeau coming down the outside. Dunedin is coming through in the middle. Dunedin, Red Cadeau, and Lucas Krennic. Dunedin is coming hard. Dunedin, Red Cadeau. Dunedin and Red Cadeau, they hit the line. A photo finish between Dunedin and Red Cadeau. Nothing in it. Third placing Lucas Krennic, I'd say, from American. Not much between those.
And that's Dunedin, who won this year's Caulfield Cup, so keep an eye on that horse. Also, American, who came home very, very, very strongly in the Caulfield Cup for a gallant fourth. I would be having a shekel on that, because I do believe it's favourite for Tuesday as well. We're going to finish with a song from the Clark and Duke Project. This is a bit of jazz by Stanley Clark. This is a track called Winners. Of course, I hope you're all winners over the coming week at the Spring Racing Carnival. I will be back on a Tuesday night with Serena on Salt and Pepper, and next Saturday for Cravings. Until then, do keep yourself nice. Thank you, boys.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.